Stationary this afternoon along the I-72 corridor. This will mean continued chances for showers and a few thunderstorms through tomorrow night. The next upper level disturbance will move from the plains to the Midwest tomorrow night into Wednesday, and that will bring the possibility for another round of showers and thunderstorms. High temperatures today will range from the mid-50s in southern Michigan to the mid-70s in Missouri, southern Illinois, southern Indiana, and western Kentucky. Lows overnight will range from the upper 30s in central Wisconsin to the low 50s along the Ohio River. The forecast for east central Illinois this afternoon, partly sunny with a slight chance of showers and thunderstorms. The high 72 and a wind from the east at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tonight, mostly cloudy with a chance of showers and thunderstorms, a low of 51 and an east wind from 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow, partly sunny with a chance of showers and thunderstorms, a high of 72. The wind will be from the south at 10 to 15 miles per hour with gusts to 25 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, showers and thunderstorms are likely. Look for a low of 54 and a southwest wind from 10 to 15 miles per hour. Wednesday, partly sunny and breezy with a chance of showers and thunderstorms, the high 68. Wednesday night and Thursday, mostly cloudy and cooler. The low Wednesday night in the mid-30s and the high Thursday in the low 40s. Thursday night, partly cloudy and cold with a low in the upper 20s. At 12 o'clock Central Time, temperatures across Illinois and Indiana ranged from 50 degrees in the north to the mid-70s south. Rockford reported 54 degrees. At O'Hare Airport, it was 50, 56 at Bloomington, 70 at Springfield, 73 at Mattoon, in Carbondale, 75. South Bend reported 52 degrees, Lafayette, 65, Indianapolis, 75, Evansville, 76. Willard Airport reported mostly sunny skies at the top of the hour, the temperature 67, the dew point 55. The relative humidity 65%, the wind out of the west at 9, and the barometric pressure 30.05 and steady. And at 12:39, 67 degrees in Urbana on the campus of the University of Illinois, the sky is sunny. Pennsylvania Governor Tom Corbett wants to cut funding for higher education in half. Schools say the proposal would lead to massive tuition hikes, scaled back courses, and other changes. Corbett says the state's colleges and universities are misusing the tax dollars they currently receive. Scott Detrow has more.
Governor Corbett delivered a simple message during his March 8th budget address. Pennsylvania is out of cash.
This budget sorts the must-haves from the nice-to-haves. Some of the cuts were expenditures in the thousands. Some ran into the millions.
About half of Corbett's savings would come from lopping $534 million out of funding for 18 colleges and universities. Impacted institutions include big names like Penn State, Pitt, and Temple, but also Pennsylvania's 14 smaller state system of higher education schools. Penn State's president, Graham Spanier, says the reduction would lead to tuition hikes, canceled courses, and mass layoffs throughout Penn State's colleges.
In agriculture alone, we are talking about 440 employees that we would have to lay off under the current budget scenario that is out there. These are not made-up numbers. These are not numbers designed to shock people. These are actual projections.
Spanier says Penn State might even close down satellite campuses. Reduced funds would have a greater impact at the smaller state system schools, which rely on state money for about 20% of their total budgets. Roger Brzuski, a vice president at Millersville University outside Lancaster, worries his school would have to eliminate critical courses.
I don't see any way that we're going to be able to offer the number and the magnitude of courses, the variety that we've been in the past. Less course availability means students have to take a longer time to get the courses that they need to graduate.
Corbett has accused Penn State's Spanier of bluffing, exaggerating the cut's impact to gain support. When his administration pushes back against the universities, it uses that four-year graduation rate as ammunition, pointing out the fact more students are taking 5 or 6 years to graduate. Just 35% of Millersville students graduate within 4 years. At Penn State's main campus, The figure is 62%. Corbett's budget secretary, Charles Zogby, says it's evidence the schools are misspending tax dollars as well as their ever-increasing tuition income.
Again, I go back to results and performance, what we get for our state dollars. And I think it's very difficult when you put the money into the institutions to see exactly what it is that we're getting.
College administrators say students are taking longer to graduate because they're working their way through school. Aaron Slagle is in that boat, sitting on a picnic table near Millersville's football field. The junior philosophy major says he schedules courses around his job.
I know some students don't work, but I have to work to be in school. I can't afford it.
Slagle's a junior and on track to graduate in 4 years. He doesn't want to stay in school any longer, but he's worried he might be forced to if the cuts lead to fewer courses in Millersville.
I have plans. I don't plan on being in school. I didn't plan on being in school after next year, but it looks like it's a possibility, yeah.
Republicans control both the Pennsylvania House and Senate, but while GOP leaders are embracing Corbett's overall budget plan, most are hesitant to publicly support the higher education cuts. A new poll shows 67% of voters are against slashing funding for colleges and universities. Lawmakers are aiming for a May or June vote on the budget. For NPR News, I'm Scott Detrow in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania.
When you think of economic ties between the Midwest and Japan, automotive companies such as Toyota, Mitsubishi, and Honda might come to mind. But the billions of business dollars that flow between Midwestern states and the Asian nation include industries such as pharmaceuticals, non-auto manufacturing, and banking. Niala Budhu of the Midwest Public Radio Project, Changing Gears, reports.
A few miles from O'Hare International Airport, the signs in this office kitchen are in English and Japanese. This is where ITA and a few other businesses that deal with Japan every day are located. ITA President Shin Kishioka is on the phone. It's a regular ritual that's increased since the earthquake as he checks in with clients. This company helps American divisions of Japanese firms like Panasonic or Mitsubishi. Since the earthquake, Kishioka says workers have been handling some unusual requests.
Especially disaster-related products, such as gas tanks and potty johns.
Japanese are also asking for help with large items like excavating equipment. There are more than 160,000 people across the Midwest directly working for Japanese businesses. Only about half of them work in manufacturing. The rest are companies like Kishioka's, doing work like IT, finance, or legal services. There are also many large American corporations employing workers in Japan. Peoria-based Caterpillar, Inc. is one of them. The company has 5,000 employees at two big manufacturing facilities in southern Japan. Caterpillar's Jim Dugan says initial reports are that its Japanese workers and facilities are okay. The company is now focused on aiding the relief effort.
Corporately, as well as our dealers, will provide a range of assistance in the form of equipment, sometimes expert operators. That equipment and those operators often used, again, in the rescue and recovery efforts after a disaster.
Michael Mosco is a senior fellow at the Chicago Council for Global Affairs and is chairman of the Japan-American Society of Chicago.
When you look at natural disasters like this, they tend to not change the longer-term trend of economic development, whether it would be in Japan or in the Midwestern part of the United States.
Mosco says it's hard to predict how long the Japanese business sector will take to recover. As it does, he sees business opportunities in construction and other rebuilding efforts. Back at ITA, most of the talk is about the earthquake. ITA's CEO Shin Kishioka was in Japan during the Kobe earthquake in 1995.
With the government support, like we had experienced in Kobe, there could be quick recovery as constructions go faster and things turn out better.
A quick recovery would be good news for hundreds of companies across the Midwest, doing billions of dollars in business each year with Japan. For NPR News, I'm Nyla Budu in Chicago.
Events in Japan are causing widespread concern in Europe about the safety of nuclear power. The European Union plans to stress test its nuclear reactors, but response to the plan varies sharply across member states. Terry Schultz reports from Brussels.
The stress tests are weeks away at best, but the stress is already in high gear. EU Energy Commissioner Günther Oettinger snapped at European parliamentarians, peppering him with questions about the very preliminary plans for evaluations of nuclear facilities. He's heard here through an interpreter.
Sorry, but if you think that you can do these stress tests, then feel free. Very good luck with it.
The EU as a whole gets about 30% of its energy from nuclear power. In France, that figure is 80%. The head of the European Parliament's Environment Committee, Joe Leinen, worries the EU could face a similar crisis to Japan's.
We have no tsunami, but we can have other external shocks like terrorist attacks or cyber attacks. And I'm not sure that all our nuclear power stations really correspond to the newest standard of security that we demand.
Oettinger actually predicts some installations won't pass the tests, which will simulate deliberate man-made threats, natural disasters, accidents such as air crashes, and mechanical failures. Johannes Thiessen, CEO of German utility giant E.ON AG, has more faith in the industry.
All nuclear installations across Europe are meeting the applicable standards.
But even Thiessen says Japan's plight proves that's no longer good enough. His company is among those affected by the German government's temporary closure of the country's 7 oldest reactors while a safety probe is conducted.
There are lessons to be learned without any doubt. We cannot just rely on present safety standards. They will need to be improved.
Markets are providing additional incentive for speedy upgrades. E.ON AG was among the stocks taking a tumble last week when Germany announced the nuclear shutdown. EU officials hope improvements can already be identified and implemented by the second half of this year. For NPR News, I'm Terry Schultz in Brussels.
From the earliest Sandlot baseball games to championship high school teams to the University of Illinois to Olympians and Paralympians, sports has been a major part of the city of Champaign. Those athletic achievements are as many and diverse as the competitors themselves. As we continue to celebrate the city's 150 years, we'll revisit some of the individuals and teams who've made their mark. Next time on Illinois Pioneers, 7:30 Thursday night on WILL-TV.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday. It's the 21st of March, 2011. It's the birthday of Johann Sebastian Bach, Eisenach, Germany, 1685. He came from a musical family. Both his parents died by the time he was 10. He was taken in by his older brother, an organist, taught him to play keyboard instruments. Sang in the boys' choir by the time he was 18, got his first job as a church organist. Bach often got in trouble, got into fights with people, had a short temper, had a habit of wandering off to nearby towns.